think the most important factors in community resilience is really in the name of itself, it's unity. It's the coming together and support of a fellow neighbor, but also the social support is how vital of the importance of how we move forward. And if we think about the effects of Hurricane Harvey, they were not confined to social or economic boundaries.
Hi, this is Ike Evans of the Hogg Foundation for Mental Health, and you are listening to Into the Fold. The Hogg Foundation is a strategic grant maker based at the University of Texas at Austin. To learn more, visit us at hogg.utexas.edu. And Hogg is spelled H-O-G-G. This episode is about a recent disaster, Hurricane Harvey. We've all seen the images. Sometimes it's first responders, sometimes just ordinary men and women coming to the rescue of flood-stricken people fleeing the relentless waters. Sometimes it's the people hauling armloads of donated goods to shelters, churches, and other organizations. Sometimes it's even a pro athlete like J.J. Watt of the NFL Houston Texans starting up a relief fund that raises tens of millions of dollars in seemingly no time at all. Over time, these headlines and images subside. However, the lives of hundreds of thousands of people remain dramatically different from what they were before the storm. And you can bet that stories will be told about their strength, their persistence, and their resilience. As an organization that works in mental health, resilience is more than just a trait of some individuals. It is also an idea that we very much want to understand. What's more, we want to put that understanding to use for the benefit of people and communities. What do we need to know about resilience? How is it fostered? And what does fostering resilience oblige us to do? Jamisha Brown is a PhD student at Texas A&M University. She leads the health ministry at Windsor Village United Methodist Church in Houston. Windsor Village was a recipient of a Hogg Foundation grant supporting faith-based organizations as promoters of mental health and wellness in predominantly African-American communities. Jamisha was diagnosed at the age of 8 with a rare form of lymphoma. 20 years later, she's a motivational speaker, a faith-based health consultant, a nonprofit strategist, and yes, a soon-to-be PhD. Jamisha, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
So as a foundation, we're very interested in understanding resilience and the social factors that promote it. From your point of view as both a researcher and someone involved with a faith community, what do you see as the hallmarks of a resilient community?
The effects of Hurricane Harvey were not confined to social and economic boundaries. Persons living in multi-million dollar homes located in gated communities suffered tremendous losses as well. And this unprecedented flood event overwhelmed neighborhoods where flood insurance was neither required nor recommended. Even families with flood insurance are financially exhausted by deductibles. And when we think about resilience is a characteristic that allows someone to get back up following an experience of adversity. When Harvey struck, it shook many families and communities to their core. Yet still, many that were personally affected by Harvey found the resolve to get back up and extend their hand in homes that were in better condition to their fellow neighbor. The important factors in community resilience is unity, the coming together in support of a fellow neighbor. Social support is vital in how we all move forward. Much of the research literature suggests that religious belief aids resilience in responding to traumatic events like Harvey and leads to a quicker recovery from mental health challenges and maladaptive coping skills. Some would say that that faith actually produces resilience. And if we think about 2 Corinthians 4:8-9, it says that we are pressed on every side by troubles, but we are not crushed. We are perplexed, but not driven to despair. We're hunted down, but never abandoned by God. We get knocked down, but we are not destroyed. That is, we hold on to our faith in God during troubled times. when we feel like the weight of the world is on our shoulders after having endured such loss during a disaster such as Harvey.
Okay, so, and if you're wondering why Misha sounds kind of far away, you should know that she's coming at us remotely from Windsor Village Church in Houston. She has managed to occupy one of the conference rooms there. So, Jamisha, what are your greatest fears and hopes for Houston? I mean, what characteristics of this city can either promote or undermine resilience after a disaster?
Some of my worst fears is actually the historical sites, restaurants, and institutions that might not be able to be rebuilt or restored post-Harvey. Some of the things that I think we did well was our actually the well-defined emergency response process that we did for over 6 million people. And I think it's important that we include a better registration process and a place that could engage volunteers and resources, as well as prioritizing the well-being of those most vulnerable, including children, elderly, older adults living alone, and those with special health care needs. Some of the other things that I really think about is the schools that were shut down in the Houston area due to issues with the infrastructure post-Harvey, and the rate at which those will be able to be rebuilt and restored. Some of the other things that we are doing well is that a lot of construction is underway. A lot of construction groups are going out into the communities and helping their fellow neighbors rebuild as a volunteer effort. So that much is great to see following such a devastation, and us communities pooling our resources together to help our neighbors.
Okay. And so, I mean, in what way did the storm impact you and your work for the church? I mean, what has life been like for you over these past several weeks? I mean, you're busy enough as it is, I would imagine.
Our church community responded enthusiastically, with more than 1,300 persons registering to volunteer. The response from the surrounding community affected by the flood was high. More than 20,000 persons actually benefited from items donated to our distribution center, including the 75 persons who use our facility actually as a temporary shelter. My mother, living in a rural town south of Houston, lost everything during Harvey. And so I've experienced some tremendous spiritual agony because of, naturally, I'm a helper, and my desire is to help others build and rebuild better lives. But now most of the camera crews are gone, and practically no mention of Harvey is presently heard on the news. However, people are still in need of assistance and material goods and developing positive coping strategies, especially now during the holidays, when the loss of their homes and things like that is really felt, because especially if you're the host of the family dinners and things like that. So this is going to be a different experience for you now, having to readjust elsewhere. For my mom, she's doing quite well. She's in the best of spirits in spite of everything. And so that much I'm very proud of her and her prayer life in relationship with God to be able to endure such difficulty and find the reason to still get up every morning.
Right. And that's one thing that I think is really important to underscore, that the mental health impacts of a disaster like Hurricane Harvey are persistent, and they are not always immediately apparent. And sometimes they don't take hold until well after, like you said, the news cameras have gone away. And another thing that we like to try to get across is that, particularly in African-American communities, that faith-based institutions are hubs of information and learning for people, right?
One of the greatest things about the Christian community in general, and our church community specifically, is the the ethos of helping to meet the needs of others. And in that sense, we are all well equipped, faithfully determined, and tirelessly determined to deal with traumatic events such as Hurricane Harvey. Some of the work that we particularly do as a health and wellness initiative is to help others build and rebuild better lives. And how we do that is by helping them achieve wholeness in mind, body, and spirit through our faith-based health and research programs. We have over 40 academic community and biopharma partnerships that enabled us to conduct all sorts of work in the area of mental health, HIV, community reform, criminal justice reform, as well as a couple of other areas, including diabetes and helping older adults cope with chronic illness and manage stress and grief and social support. And these projects are in partnership with several ministries within the church. So it offers a varied perspective in how we conduct our programs so that we ensure that everyone has a seat at the table and that we are enabling ourselves to meet the needs of a diverse group of people, not only racially and ethnically, but also varied backgrounds, experiences, income levels, and other things that bring people here to Windsor Village or to our nearby community. And so that's our goal, is to really help those achieve health and wholeness in their mind, body, and spirit. And we strive to reach as many people as possible, and being able to help them overcome whatever health challenge they might be facing, but also help them connect the spirituality with whatever circumstance that they are going through, either in their minds or within their body, and emphasizing wholeness as the desired goal, and that our mental health is just as important as our physical well-being. And when we think about resilience in the African-American communities, research shows that African-Americans are more likely to turn to their faith during times of turmoil, and that typically is their churches and their pastoral leaders or as pillars in the community. Another thing that African-Americans tend to do is that the church community offers a safe place or a safe haven. Historically, when we were not allowed to go into other areas, it also offers a gathering place for matters of social justice and community organizing. So it's only seems like first nature for African American communities to rely on the faith community, the churches that are located within their neighborhoods to overcome such difficulty like Harvey, and also turn to the church for the coping strategies that they need to get through such devastation presently and in the long term.
Okay, and so I did not lead with your personal story because I think I really wanted to give you the chance to talk about your work. You know, just because it's so urgent right now, and I think it's, you know, the informational value to our listeners and having a good grasp of just what it means to be implanted in that kind of community doing the work that you're doing, I think is critical. But, you know, dealing with cancer like you did, I mean, I'm sure that, you know, your own will to survive and thrive was tremendous. I'm also interested, though, in some of the supportive community resources that you had, just hitting on this theme of resilience and what you can tell us about those.
Recently, a physician described my journey as one of post-traumatic success. Prior to my encounter with him, I've never heard of such a thing. I mean, we are familiar with post-traumatic stress disorder, but this was described as the opposite end of the spectrum. Post-traumatic success is how we use difficult circumstances in life to their benefit. For me, I grew up in disparate living conditions, and at one point in time, our bathroom was on the outside of the house, and we washed clothes, bathed, and did our business in a bucket. I must add, there were separate buckets. I've been on the for each of those activities. I've been on that journey to conquer cancer for nearly 20 years now, and my faith was and is my most valuable resource. I learned to maintain hope, even when I was told there was none left. The outer resources within the hospital system proved invaluable. I mean, I did not miss a beat of school from elementary through high school because of the in-hospital education program and the educational counselors that assisted during outpatient visits. My parents, my grandmother, wow. My grandmother was a significant source of strength for me, being that she was bedridden for a majority of my childhood in the early part of my adulthood due to several strokes. And she never gave up the will to live a fulfilling life, despite not being able to, or in spite of not being able to do much for herself. And though we had very little tangible goods of value, we had hope, and the hope that knows that it does get better if we just hold on for a while longer, the kind of hope that's necessary to get through extreme difficulty. So throughout the years, I realized that I needed to make the adversity I was enduring to work to my advantage. You have to, when I think about survival, in survival, you are fighting for your existence, but you thrive by how you choose to live. And that's not as a victim, but as a champion. You're fighting through the adversity, the pain, the hardship. Thriving in spite of is how you get your reward from it. That never giving up no matter what, and that never settling for less. And that's what's important to me, to keep going. And now I'm in my late 20s now, and close to wrapping up a PhD within the next year and a half or so, and just not missing a beat of all the milestone moments in my career thus far and in life. And that's the hope and the overcoming that I like to share with not only my children, but my loved ones and others, all who aspire to do something great, having started from very little. That you can do it. And that's the spark of hope that faith inspires and that education inspires, that never giving up.
Okay, and thank you for that. And that phrase, post-traumatic success, I think beautifully encapsulates what it is that we want for Houston and for communities everywhere that have been impacted by, disasters and other stressful events. Jamisha Brown, thank you so much for taking the time to visit with us and to shed some light on the issue of disasters, faith, and resilience. We very much appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Mr. Evans, for sharing with us your platform and allowing us to talk about the work we're doing as a faith community to address post-Harvey related matters, especially considering the mental and the physical health effects after such a traumatic experience. So thank you again, and especially the Hawk Foundation for their support of our faith-based mental health initiative here at Windsor Village. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Our next guest is Vicky Coffey. She is a program officer at the Hogg Foundation for Mental Health. She's with us to give us some background about the foundation's work with faith-based communities, particularly in African-American communities. Vicky, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So the grant initiative is officially titled African-American Faith-Based Education and Awareness Initiative. In a nutshell, who are these grantees? Where are they? And what makes them special to us?
So the grantees consist of 10 faith-based organizations, primarily churches, throughout Texas. Most of them in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, the other in the Houston area, and then we have one of our rural grantees who is located in Taylor, Texas. And they were selected because they recognized the importance of the role that churches play in educating African American communities about mental health, wellness, and recovery.
Okay. And so what outcomes and lessons learned are we starting to see with the grant program since it began in 2015?
So we know it's important to call mental illness what it is, but oftentimes using that, even that term, is too scary and very taboo for people of color to want to talk about and engage in dialogue around that topic. So through this initiative, we've really learned that talking about the symptoms of how mental health manifests itself in a community is much more palatable rather than saying we're going to have a session about mental health and mental illness.
Yeah.
It seems to go across well. When we offer sessions that are focused on specific topics that people are more familiar and more comfortable talking about, such as stress or domestic violence, and even substance use concerns, and then specifically related to children, behavioral symptoms that children may exhibit. I would definitely say one of the things that we've recognized is that leadership buy-in is mission critical. You have to have the pastors or the bishop or whoever it is that's in the key leading role for the church to have their support. It's important because they can help really lead their congregants and their community in this topic. And then lastly, churches don't have to be the expert, and their role, of course, is not to diagnose and treat anyone in their congregation. And congregants use their faith as a tool to help them heal, right? And to help them address their needs to recover and also to try to maintain their wellness and stability. And so one of the best things that a church can do is to be accepting, to create a caring environment, and to give congregants the same unconditional love and respect and support as they do individuals who present to them with physical health conditions.
We recently decided to extend another year of funding to the grantees. So what prompted this decision, and what are we hoping comes out of it?
Well, there's a couple of things that we're hoping are the results of extending the funding for an additional year. One is, of course, we'd like for there to be continued efforts to educate clergy and congregants and the communities about mental health recovery and wellness, primarily in the African American community. We also have added a new twist or a new focus, and that is, as a result of the recent hurricane that took place this past fall, we are hoping that the churches are going to be able to address the mental health impacts and the trauma that may have resulted as a result of the disaster, such as Hurricane Harvey, and then other catastrophic events that happen. We really want for the different grantees to develop a stronger collaborative so that once the grant has ended, they're able to continue these efforts in their communities.
If you want to find more information about the initiative or about any one of the grantees and what they're doing, you can find that information on our website, hogg.utexas.edu. Hogg is spelled H-O-G-G. I think that you can find a direct link to the landing page for the faith-based initiative if you, on our homepage, click the What We Do drop-down menu, and then you ought to be able to navigate to it that way. But otherwise, just do a search, and it should pop up pretty quickly. Vicki Coffey, we really appreciate it. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.